Good evening. Welcome. Glad you're with me. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Again, firmly ensconced in the Allstate Showcase studio on a bustling Michigan Avenue. Oh, my goodness. Lovely, lovely Sunday here in Chicago. Big show planned. It's always more fun when you get involved. You know that. It's easy to do. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. When you call in, you'll be talking to what? Cody, I think I used to work here. Goff, the executive producer, the rumored executive producer from Rockford, Illinois, back from his travels abroad and down to central Indiana. He's been all over the world, and now he's back in the glass box taking your calls. So be nice to him. You'll get to me and ease him back in. He's been away for a while. He might not remember how this works. So if you're nice to him, you'll get to me. You know that's how it works. That's how it always has worked. If you want to keep up with us on social media, it's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. Just a few minutes, we're going to be heading to Milwaukee where things, the National Guard has been called out. Things have been very rough up there the last 24 hours. We'll talk to Eric Bilstead from WTMJ Radio, who has been covering it all since last night. We'll get an update on that. We're also going to talk about what could be happening to Chicago Public Schools if the teachers union and the Board of Education in the city do not have a meeting of the minds. There has been a deal that's been put out there. The teachers union originally seemed to think this was a fine idea. Karen Lewis did, but then the union thought otherwise. Will there be a strike? Is the union acting like a bunch of children? We'll get into that after 7 o'clock. Karen Conti will be here after 8 to answer your legal questions and talk about a story that who would have thought we would be talking about this in 2016, but it's not all right anymore to call female lawyers honey and sweetie and baby. That's I didn't think this was actually a thing anymore that we had to worry about, but I guess it is. So we'll talk to Karen about that. And intermixed with that, we'll have treats in the news. We've got a couple Pokemon Go stories because you can never get enough Pokemon Go stories, especially when Cody has been dealing with Spaniards playing Pokemon Go. And how many Spaniards were you with?
Thousands.
Thousands of Spaniards at a Pokemon Go meet and greet?
Yep.
What did they call it?
A meetup. There's no official name. I mean, it's not officially sanctioned by anybody.
Oh, of course not.
Right? It's just some people.
Everybody that just shows up.
Yeah.
And did they catch it? You would think with that many people, they would have caught them all.
No,
still did not.
There's a lot of Pokemon out there, Brian.
Well, there's one in a very unusual spot, and that's part of one of our Pokemon stories. So we'll get to that. And also, for all you guys who are going to the gym, it's not doing you any good because a new study has come out that, myself included, this is not working out the way we hoped.
What?
When we compare ourselves to men of the past.
What?
Well, you just have to wait. It's called a tease, buddy.
That's how
we do it. I know you've been going a long time. You forget the mechanics of radio.
Mm-hmm.
One of the mechanics is we say hello to Roger, who is sitting up there grinning, saying, please talk to me. You never talk to me. I want to be part of the show. Talk to me. Hello, Roger. How are you?
How are you doing, Brian? Welcome back, Cody.
You missed it last week, Cody, and I think he's doing it again. He puts on this voice like he's trying to seduce people.
What?
He drops his voice down a couple registers, and then he makes it a little guttural when he speaks.
Why would I do that?
Is that why I had that tingling feeling a minute ago?
And that's when I put him in the cone of silence, because it's creepy, and it makes me uncomfortable, and I don't like to be uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable enough on the program without having Roger's weird Barry Manilow. That wouldn't have been right.
No.
Barry White.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
With his own Barry White kind of let's get it on vibe that he's trying to throw down. So save that for when you're talking about beach volleyball.
Oh, yeah.
Save that.
Yeah.
Save it for that.
We'll do that.
There was some Olympic golf on. I'm sure you were watching that.
I was. Oh, yeah.
I have less interest in Olympic golf than I do in professional golf.
Well, you know, to each his own.
We'll
get you out on the course. That'll be.
No.
We'll get you out of the gym, and we'll go walk a course, and that's great exercise.
I do enough walking. I don't need to walk anymore.
All right.
God's green acres.
All right, we'll sit you in a cart then.
I go golfing for the same reason I go bowling, to drink. Those are the two sports.
We can accommodate you.
I understand. Thank you very much. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Eric Bilstead from WTMJ in Milwaukee. He'll update us on what's going on up there. A horrible, horrible night and rough into today. So we'll do that on the other side. It's 720 WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. You've been following what's been going on just north of us in Milwaukee. A horrible, horrible night of violence And now the National Guard has been activated by the governor. We want to find out what's going on up there. So I reached out to a friend of mine, Eric Bilstead, is the executive producer for news at WTMJ Radio in Milwaukee. He joins us now. Eric, thanks for taking some time this afternoon. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Brian. How are you?
I am well, thanks. So what's the latest? We heard that the governor, Governor Walker, has activated the National Guard. What's going on up there?
Yeah, so because of what happened last night, which got pretty intense for a few hours there through the overnight, yes, the National Guard has been activated. Now, it has not been deployed.
Okay.
And they were that was key today. That was one of the things during the news conference today that the mayor of Milwaukee, Tom Barrett, wanted to reiterate to everybody. So basically what that means is that the Guard, about 150 of them, have made their way to Milwaukee. They are prepared to do whatever they need to do, but it is at the whim of the police chief here in Milwaukee, Edward Flynn. So as of now, they have not been deployed to go to the streets. All they are doing is waiting to be asked to do something. So hopefully, you know, the best case scenario is that they're here and they are never asked to do anything.
Right.
But they are in Milwaukee and they are ready if need be.
Now, last night, the mayor and two politicians had a press conference urging peace. It seemed as if this morning things had settled down a little bit. There were reports of people coming out to the scenes of the gas station that was burned out in the bank and trying to clean up. What's the situation now?
Yeah, there has been a couple of interesting moments that popped up today. We did have, on the negative side, we did have some people fire shots at one of the district headquarters of a police station in town. And in those cases, no one was hurt. Don't know where those shots came from, but they did have to board up the windows. And they do have officers now on the roof of that district headquarters keeping an eye out. And they'll do that throughout the night tonight. That's the one moment that really popped up for everybody as far as the negative side. On the positive side, it was pretty remarkable. At 8 a.m. this morning, a group called Coalition for Justice came together. They held a prayer vigil in one of the parks there. You know, all the cameras came. And then they went to work. They all went through the neighborhood and cleaned it up. I mean, we had bus shelters that were thrown and destroyed. We had other areas that were caught fire. I mean, you mentioned the BP gas station. They went to these areas and symbolically, we're trying to clean them up. We're trying to move these forward. We're trying to get back to a life as normal, you know, for a lot of different reasons. Obviously, no one wants to live in an area that is desolate like that, but also exactly. Because they want to come together. You know, they want to prove that this is something that can be overcome, that they can work together and we can all live in harmony in one way or another.
Now, let's go back to the National Guard for a minute. You said this is the decision to deploy is up to Milwaukee's police chief. Have they given you guys any indication of what level the civil unrest would need to reach before they decided to deploy the National Guard?
No, but I'm guessing, and again, this is pure speculation, of course, Brian, but I'm guessing that if it's anything like it was yesterday, they'll have them out there. If they're available and they're ready to go, then they'll activate them. And it was interesting the way they brought that up, because Governor Walker, who, you know, some folks in your neck of the woods may know, he ran for president not too long ago. Right. He's a Republican, a conservative. The mayor of Milwaukee is a Democrat. They've run against each other for governor a couple of times, and the mayor of Milwaukee has lost both times. They brought that up today during the news conference. The mayor said, look, you know, obviously we don't get along politically. We've had our differences. In this case, we both agreed that we would activate. We'd have them available. They would be on site, but they will not be actually deployed and sent into the field unless the chief makes that call. And everyone agreed, including the sheriff of Milwaukee County, that that would be the way it would go, that the chief would have full authority to be able to do it. What's interesting is today, and you know, and again, it's purely symbolic or maybe not, today when I mentioned that officer who's on the roof of the district headquarters that they right. gotten shot at today, and the other officers that are, you know, standing in front of the boarded windows, they're not in riot gear.
Really?
They're not sitting there with shields and giant helmets and all this stuff. Now, obviously, they have protective clothing,
sure.
But they're not in that full garb that symbolically sometimes can show a military state or something to that point, right?
Right.
So, you know, that might have been a way of saying, look, you know, we want to listen. We want to hear you. What also we learned today is the officer-involved shooting that led to all this. Now, you know, Brian, everyone will say a million different things that led to what happened last night.
Yeah, I wanted to get to that with you because the initial reports were that the police stopped this car for, quote-unquote, suspicious activity.
Right.
What are they saying about this guy?
There is a body cam, by the way, on the officer that was involved in the shooting. and that video does exist.
Okay.
And stopped this guy. Guy got out of the car, ran after him, and that's when the gun was pulled out and the shots were fired. Now, that video has not been released yet, and it's never been released this quickly after an officer
right.
shooting. In fact, I think it's Rahm Emanuel. I think in Chicago there, he was the first to do it so quickly. I think they released one of their shootings videos once, like a week.
Yeah, this the last one came out very quickly
right.
on the heels
right.
of
that,
Laquan McDonald.
Yeah, that's a record. I mean, it never comes out that early. So, but we do know that some people have seen it. We do know that the mayor has seen a screen cap of it. And they claim he's holding a gun, and they claim that he was shot in the arm and the chest, not in the back. Autopsies are being done today. And also interesting to note is that the officer involved in the shooting is African-American, and now he is out of Milwaukee. They have sent him out of here.
Really?
Because he is well-known in that area. I mean, Sherman Park, where this happened, this is a unique part of the city. You know, a lot of people know each other. It is mm-hmm. not immune to violence. They've had some issues in the past, and here is a guy who many of them in that area knew just because of who he was.
And he's a young guy, correct? He's only like 24, is that correct?
Yeah. So here's a guy who now is in, you know, administrative leave, all that stuff, but they have him away. They have him out of the city to protect okay. him because they're a little worried about what if there'd be retribution there. But it's interesting to note that in this case, you know, what often is talked about as being a racial thing, right, when it comes
sure.
to a white police officer, a black man being shot. In this case, it was an African-American officer, an African-American man who was also well-liked in that community. I mean, this was a guy who did have priors and was breaking the law. He had a weapon that they claim was not his, a stolen weapon.
Yeah, they supposedly stolen from burglary in Waukesha a few months ago,
yeah,
right?
Right. So then you have that, you know, and it all kind of culminates. You have all these young folks there who are upset about losing this friend of theirs, and they want someone to pay. And it was very interesting that last night, one of the aldermen who represents this district where this all happened, he said, and this was like 12:30 at night when they had this news conference, he's holding his phone, and he goes, hold on, I got to read you this text. And he pulls out his phone, he's looking at his text, and he's like, this is from a friend of mine who lives in this area. And he basically read verbatim this text, and the guy basically said, we don't know what else to do. And a lot of these young kids don't know what else to do. They're so upset. They feel they've been oppressed. Perception is reality,
right.
you know, as far as they're concerned, with what's been happening.
Well, the tensions have been.
They don't know what else to do.
The tensions have been high in Milwaukee between the police and the citizens for a long time. And people
right.
who don't live there may not know. Nearly 40% of Milwaukee's residents are black. This incident happened on the north side, right? But
yes.
the police and the community have been clashing. At least for the last couple years, it started with Dontre Hamilton shooting, and
mm-hmm.
there have been other incidents. So it seems like, as you said, perception is reality. If the community is believing that the police are, you know, an occupying force, things start to boil over.
Sure. Oh, yeah. And there's been a lot of different things that have happened. I mean, you mentioned Dontre Hamilton. He was shot in the middle of downtown Milwaukee, like at 5 o'clock on a random April day. He wasn't armed when that happened. That was one incident. There's been several others. There's also been issues with officers doing body cavity searches illegally, and the city actually got sued for that. And there was a lot of concern about how many people were involved in that and whether or not that was going to eliminate some criminal cases, you know, where there had already been convictions because of the way officers had been illegally searching suspects. So there's been a lot of things. It's not just one. I mean,
sure.
it's obviously a culmination. So everyone, if you look and you say at the surface, well, it was just this shooting, you know, why would this one where the guy had a gun, why would this be the one that
yeah.
tipped it over? Well, it really wasn't just this one. It was just the latest example, and it just, you know, everything was the perfect storm.
So just to reiterate, Eric, the things seem to have settled down a little bit now. Fires are all out there. Does it seem as if there may be more unrest tonight, or is there a seeming lid on things?
There is a concern. There is a concern for another night. You know, we have the weather is going to be nice
yep.
tonight. You know how that kind of plays a role in some of this. But there are a lot of eyes on it now, and not just Milwaukee eyes. You know, the nation now
right.
is watching this. The BBC, you know, the people overseas are watching this now. So because of that, there are many who would be surprised if it got to what it was yesterday, especially because you have the National Guard involved now. You have all these other officers that are prepared for it already. You know, yesterday kind of caught people by surprise, and all of a sudden the officers had to react. Now they can be a little bit more proactive. So my, you know, to speculate and to guess, I would guess that there will be some kind of demonstration tonight, that there will be some activity. But will it be like tomorrow? I mean, time will tell. Or I'm sorry.
Like yesterday?
Like yesterday? Time will tell. Let's hope not. Everyone's kind of crossing their fingers hoping that's not the case.
Well, we'll keep a good thought for you. I really appreciate your time this afternoon. I know you guys are busy up there at WTMJ keeping everybody informed about what's going on. So thanks for taking some time this afternoon, Eric.
No, absolutely. Anything for you, Brian.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Take care. That's Eric Bilstad. He is the executive producer of news at 620 WTMJ in Milwaukee. A lot going on. We will, of course, be watching the developments up there. It's north side. This happened on the north side of town, which is actually not far from where WTMJ's studios are. Their TV and radio studios are up on the north end of town. So it's, you know. And you hate to see that. You hate to see it in Milwaukee. You'd hate to see it here anytime there's shooting. But it'll be interesting to see how quickly they release the body cam video to the public. If people, obviously, officials are already looking at it. But because sometimes those videos will incense the public if they show things that they shouldn't have. Sometimes they may work to quiet the public if they in fact show an incident that goes along with how the police described it. So we'll see. But anytime, man, I tell you, watching that video last night and seeing a city in flames, and I'm not being hyperbolic, they were showing video from the interstate, and you see a whole block on fire. Things are not good in the land of cheese. Let's do this, and then it'll be news time on 720 WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. We will be talking to Karen Conti after 8 o'clock. And after 7 o'clock, if you have a student in the Chicago Public Schools, I know you're going to want to weigh in on this, the possibility of another strike. The teachers worked the end of last year without a contract. Haven't had a contract in a year. Things are coming to a head again. So we will talk about that after 7 o'clock. But now I need, I need some help. Which doesn't set today apart from any other day, truly. But my daughter, they finished their big cross-country sojourn. So we talked about this a little on the web-exclusive podcast, which if you have not been checking out the web-exclusive podcast, oh my goodness, have you been missing some fun. We'll be doing another one today. Of course, the first 10 to 15 minutes of that web-exclusive podcast will be on Facebook Live, and then we will morph right into the podcast that you can hear on WGNradio.com. So go and hear all of those. But anyway, so they finished their cross-country journey. She's home from her internship with the Conan Show, which went very well. And now she's home until next Sunday. This time next week, she will be jetting to Spain to begin a semester abroad, studying in Madrid, which I'm nervous about. And she is nervous. She's getting more and more nervous about it, which is making me nervous, because now she's not only nervous about, of course, going to study in another country, she's starting to worry about terrorism and things like that. She's panicked every day. What if there's an attack? It didn't bother her so much that she didn't head down to St. Louis today. So again, the timeline. She got home Wednesday. She left town today. She'll come home Tuesday. She leaves for 4 months on Sunday. But I'm wondering, if you've sent your kids abroad to study, and I know a lot of you have, which is weird to me. Roger, when you were in school, back when there was one room, did anybody that you knew travel abroad to study?
During high school?
During college.
Oh, during college. I didn't know any personally.
Neither did I. See, that was Cody, were you of the age when people studied abroad? I'm trying to figure out when this became a thing, because now every college has study abroad departments, and everybody seems to have to study abroad, and it's, you know, I'm like, eh. Now, she's doing it because it's part of this combine. Anyway, this program that she was, this cohort that she was accepted into, that was part of the deal that you study abroad. It's for global business. But I'm trying to figure out when study abroad became a huge thing. Did you know a lot of people who did that, Cody?
I didn't know anybody, but over 25% of Drake students studied abroad. if I remember.
Currently or back in the day?
Back in 2000, this would have been 2005, 2006-ish.
Okay, so now, that's so, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So that was...
25%? That's a big chunk.
That is a huge amount.
Yeah. I know, and we didn't even have language programs.
David studied abroad.
What did he study?
He studied architecture, and it was part of an urban revitalization special within his major. He didn't have to. It wasn't required. But he went over to Italy. He spent a semester in Italy.
Wow.
That's when we went over.
Somebody texting in that Loyola has had a Rome Center since the early 60s. So I'm not saying people never did it. I just didn't know anybody. At Southern people weren't going to study abroad.
In fact, you know what was big back when I was there and then shortly thereafter when you showed up? Was that students from abroad were coming to study at SIU.
Sure, bring them to Southern Illinois.
There was
the jewel of the United States.
Well, but it was very big. They were recruiting from overseas.
Sure. Well, now
and then the school actually opened up a school.
Swallow what you're eating, and then you can finish what you're talking about.
No, I was trying to throw in another idea.
I know I'm not the only one who caught that.
Actually, when I think about it, my girlfriend and my sister have both studied abroad in undergrad, and one of my friends my friend who lives in Madrid now, I went to elementary school with, works for some university like St. Louis or something, their office in Madrid to coordinate their study abroad things. So it's a thing.
I know. It's a huge thing, and I don't begrudge her the fact that she's going. I'm just – here's the thing. I like to have a little more – I guess it's good for me, a little more control. So, you know – while I didn't oversee every step of all her stuff at Tulane, I knew that when she arrived in New Orleans, she had classes and there were buildings and all that. And now this whole study abroad thing seems very ethereal to me. Oh, yeah, she's going to Madrid and then she's going to go to school. Well, does she have her classes yet? No, they don't give them those until they get there. I'm like, but she sent in a form, you know, with her requests and then with backups. So then they do that. And I was like, well, when do classes start? Well, she gets there next Sunday or next Monday, and then she's got kind of a week, and then there's orientation, and then classes start. I'm like, oh, well, what days will you be going to school? I don't know. I haven't got my schedule. Oh, well, do you know when you're – she knows when she's leaving and when she's coming home. That's
it. Well, let me ask you, what percentage of things that you learned in college happened inside versus outside the classroom?
Oh.
You know, a lot of people would say that their college experience, a lot of the life lessons they learn are outside the classroom, and being in another country is going to allow
in another country is going to be wonderful. Again, I'm all for this.
Yeah.
I'm just very, I'm nervous about it because, and here's the other thing, as a parent, I know if anything, like when she comes back in the spring and goes back to Tulane, if God forbid anything were to happen, I can be in New Orleans in a couple hours. I go to Midway, I get on Southwest, I'm there in an hour and 45 minutes. Lovely. If something happens in Madrid, you know, I'm not sure about Spanish doctors. You just got back from there. Do they have hospitals and medical professionals over there, Cody?
It's a first world country.
First world country, so they have grocery stores, et cetera?
They have refrigeration.
Do they have a Target? Do the kids go to Target to buy their supplies? Where do you get a school supply over in Madrid?
Oh, boy, that's a good question.
That's the other stupid thing. I was like, we were out the other day, and I said, well, should we get some pens or paper? Who uses pens and paper anymore? She's not going to school on the prairie with Laura Ingalls Wilder. She has a computer. That's all she needs for school.
Now you got to get her one of those adapters for AC outlets.
I did that when she went back in high school.
Oh, okay.
It's a big clunky deal, but I get you plug your thing in and whatever outlet they have over in Madrid, she should be able to plug in.
I've got an extra one if you need it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll hook that up. But I don't know. I'm not sure how this whole thing works. Somebody just texted in. Hold on. It jumped around a little bit. My daughter studied at Humboldt University in Berlin as part of her minor in German and major in biochemistry. Best thing she ever did. That's from Margaret in Bridgeport. From the 7th, 7th, 3rd, I went to study in Italy for 2 semesters and stayed 5 and returned for summers during grad school. The best years of my life and the most formative. Did this in the mid-90s. Had a former nephew. Went to Paris about 10 years ago. Of course, he was a French major. Who knows why he majored in French? He found a good number of Americans there. The best life lesson is internal discipline. We all know that people are the same wherever you go. Yeah. So I think it'll be fun to go over there for her and to study and to learn all sorts of things. Now we're debating, if we're going to go. We may jump on it. We may jet over to Madrid. For a few
do
days.
It. That's just what we days. Did. That was the excuse we had. We made.
Well, here we were going. This is all very. We were going to go in the spring, but then when she was going to be there for a year, now she's only going to be there for a semester, and we were like, eh, I don't know. Is it worth it? So we planned another trip for the spring for our anniversary, but now in the last day, we're starting to feel guilty that she's going to be gone for 4 months, and we won't. So today
You're starting to make plans?
We're starting, yeah. We're starting to look for, you know, inexpensive flights. And,
sure.
But then she doesn't. Wouldn't you be? Now, granted,
mm-hmm.
I'm not a teenage girl or a young woman who will be 20 at the end mm-hmm. of the month. If my parents were willing to sacrifice to come over to visit me in Madrid for a few days, what would the reaction be that you would hope for?
You would think that she would appreciate having you
sure.
over there.
A little gratitude.
Yeah,
a little hey.
Not gratitude, but hey, come on over.
That'll be exciting.
You know, we'll go out for dinner. I'll sure. let you meet my friends and then get lost.
You can leave me a couple of euros.
There you go.
And not euros, euros, the actual money. Do they have euros over in Spain, Cody? What can I look forward to when I get there, if I go?
A lot of potatoes.
See, and that shocks me.
Friend, I'm not talking Ireland, but baked potato. I'm talking French fries. I'm talking potato
wedges,
things, just a lot of
really
carbs.
A lot of carbs. I see, and I would have thought like fish and olives and
olives everywhere.
I love olives,
but I mean you're not going to get full on olives.
No, it depends on how many you eat.
Olives, cervezas everywhere.
Cervezas everywhere.
Oh my gosh!
That's French.
You've got some work to do. I'll get you sorted out on the podcast.
I have to Rosetta. Yes, the podcast will be a lot of Cody's stories from Spain, from Madrid, and me trying not to be the ugly American while I sit in America.
I took some notes when I was there.
Did you?
So the podcast will actually be kind of a top things to know before going to Madrid.
Okay.
So the top things that might surprise people or that are first-time travelers like yourself or that might be there for a short period of time.
Are they going to shock us more than the potato revelation? Because the potato revelation, had I said I was going to Ireland for the semester, that would have been my top thing that would have popped into my mind. But not Spain. Not España.
Yeah, no, I'll talk about the cuisine. I'll talk about the culture things.
We'll get into all of that. Yeah. Joy wants to jump in. She's in Tennessee. Hi, Joy. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, Brian. This is Joy. I'm in Franklin, Tennessee. Listen to you on iHeartRadio.
Oh, well, welcome.
And thank you, Brian. I'm one of your biggest fans. Anytime I know you're going to be on, I have to get in there. Brian, 2 years ago in 14, I made a trip to Barcelona, to Madrid. I went on a Rick Steves trip to Spain. At the same time, my grandson, who's an honor student at the UT Knoxville. Okay. No, you're not a big Tennessee fan.
Come on, Nashville. I've been to Knoxville with the closed down Sky Sphere.
Okay.
I've been there. I know all about it.
Okay. But he spent a semester in Spain and he was in Madrid. He arrived the day after we arrived, before we arrived, I should say. Didn't get to touch base with him. It was life-changing for both of us. Never pass up an opportunity to go to Spain. Wow. It is fabulous. It is the safest. You're much safer there than on the streets of Chicago, and I love Chicago.
Well, that wouldn't take a lot, Joy, to be safer anywhere than Chicago.
It's fabulous. At night, the people come out on the street and they sing and they dance and it's just so family oriented. You'll never feel safer.
Well, that is a great endorsement.
Oh, I'm so envious of you going. It's fabulous.
Well, thank you, Joy, and thanks for making me a little more comfortable about sending my daughter over there. I appreciate it.
Oh, my grandson changed his major to international finance after being there.
All right. Well, hopefully you get back there, Joy, and thanks for listening and calling in from Tennessee. We appreciate
it. It's been my pleasure. Take care,
Brian.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bless.
You too. Bye-bye. My daughter from the 847 studied in Sweden for a semester. She traveled throughout Europe. It was a great experience. They figured everything out. She just studied for 3 weeks in Costa Rica for DePaul Law School. She has no fear now. Yeah, see, my daughter last summer was in Costa Rica, and that was the place they were staying in Costa Rica was guarded by federales. Literally machine gun toting federales. So I would think that, you know, the thought of going to Spain where she's been before during high school wouldn't make her nervous. I think it's just, she's just getting nervous for nervous sake because, you know, she's leaving and, but now that she knows Dad will be dropping by, it's not really a drop-in, is it? It's not a pop-in if you're going to Madrid to say, hey, what's going on?
You're swinging by.
Yeah.
Stop by. Happened to be in the neighborhood.
Yeah. I was just in Madrid because I was catching a soccer game, and I thought I'd give you a holler.
A football match.
A football match, right. It's not a soccer game.
Mm-hmm.
I will not fit in. Should I go now and buy all my USA gear and just walk around real loud? That's right, I'm an American.
The only thing I don't want you to do is just don't bring a selfie stick.
Oh, I would not.
Because I saw probably, in my 2 weeks there, I saw probably 30 or 40 people with selfie sticks.
Really?
Every single one was American. I'm not exaggerating.
Oh, I will not. No.
Literally everyone was American. It's like putting a big stamp on your chest that says, I don't belong here, and I'm dumb enough to own a selfie stick.
No, the only reason I would have a selfie stick would to beat myself to death for having a selfie stick.
Mm-hmm.
See the irony there? It's weird. I would buy it just to kill myself for having it.
The worst part is I saw so many people taking a selfie with the selfie stick when they could have used their arm. They're not even going more than a foot away. I mean, they're
not Tyrannosauruses?
No.
They don't have the little baby arm going, the little they could extend their arm a full human length.
Is that what a Tyrannosaurus sounds like?
Yeah, well, one who's trying to take a picture. No, that was the person with the Tyrannosaurus arms. He's just got all clawed up and he can't get his phone out. No, I deplore selfie sticks. I'm looking forward to, I will take many pictures with a, you know, either with a camera, an actual camera. Which I still own a couple,
mm-hmm.
and or my phone.
Me too. I brought a camera.
And oh, did you take many pictures?
Many pictures.
Nice. See, I'm excited. Even if, here's the thing, if we get over there and she doesn't want to see us, we're still in Spain, so I still go around.
Yeah.
She was just like, because she is, you know, she's already planning. Another friend of hers will be in Germany, so they're planning many trips because you can get from country to country very easily between trains, and there's this Ryanair that. You know, flies between countries very inexpensively. For like $50, you can fly to Germany or whatever. So she just didn't want, her schedule upended by us arriving. But, you didn't tell us what your daughter said when you told her you were going to see her. She said, you don't have to come. Why are you coming? We said, well, we thought it would be nice. You go, well, no, it would be nice, but I just, I don't know. I don't want it to interrupt things because I have things I want to do. And I was like, yeah, okay, well, we're coming during the week because I can't go on weekends because of I'm here and I'm in Tony and Tina's wedding. So we can't go on the weekends. So we're going to go like from a Sunday night to a Friday. But I don't know. So I think she'll be fine. She will realize that it'll be nice to see us because I think once you get somewhere and you realize that you can't see your family for 4 months, that's a long time. You know, it was a long time for us just the summer. So it was June, July, basically 2 months. So double that before she'd get to see us again because she's not coming home till Christmas Eve.
But not just doubling it. She was in L.A. She was in the USA.
Right.
Now she's in a foreign country.
Foreign country.
Now, is she going with others from her same school?
Well, we'll get to that in a moment.
Oh, okay.
Because we've got some more texts. We've got to do this, and Cody's back, and so you know I got to do business. We got to take care of business. We'll do that and talk a little more on the other side. It's WGN. All right, Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. We are talking about studying abroad, something that I was not akin to. I didn't know anybody who studied abroad. Now it seems everybody's studying abroad. My daughter leaves next Sunday for Madrid, and we're contemplating going to see her in the midst of her trip. From the 847, both my niece and nephew have done semesters abroad. It's a great experience for them to see other parts of the world and the people they will befriend. From the 708, my son went to Asia as part of his studies. It was the most expensive thing we ever did. That was 15 years ago or so. The cost is crazy, but it actually comes out a little cheaper than the semester at school. A little bit. You got to, I guess, the airfare. The airfare is kind of covered by this cohort that she's in. The apartment she rented is cheaper than the room and board at school. Tuition's about the same. So it comes out, thankfully, it comes out about the same. you know, except there'll be a few more incidentals, I'm sure. And then, of course, it's more for us to go visit New Orleans is a lot cheaper than for us to go visit Spain. Cody, I got a text here. Says there's a lot of ham in Spain.
Yep.
You know my feelings about ham.
I do, but
it's probably different, though.
Very different.
All right. I've had a, is it a Iberico ham? Iberico?
Iberico. So there's Iberico. Varieties.
I've had some of that here in the U.S., and it was good because it was more like a, I don't know, like a salami, more of like a cured meat than mm-hmm. than the sweet kind of honey-baked ham.
Yeah, no, it's not like honey-baked at all.
All right, good. My daughter studied in Sweden for a semester. She traveled throughout Europe. It was a great experience. They figured everything out. She just studied. Oh, this was the Costa Rica person, too. So somebody telling me to go from the 847. You will regret not going if that is what you choose to do. Enjoy. She will be happy to see you, even if only for a short time. P.S. My son-in-law, who is 49, went to England when a student at St. Mary's University in Winona, Minnesota. He still talks about the experience. Spain is a wonderful place to visit. Good luck. So thank you. And Mike wants to jump in. He's in Highland Park. Hi, Mike. You're on WGN.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, my wife and I went to Spain about 3 years ago. We went to Madrid for 3 days and Barcelona for seven, and it was the best trip I've ever taken. I love it. I love the people, love the food, love the tapas bars. The biggest problem with Madrid is it's huge. I mapped out this. I took this map with me, and okay. I planned this whole walking tour. I was going to go through the financial district and all these areas. They're huge. And so I wound up taking a Segway tour, and it was the best thing I ever did. In 2 hours, I went through the whole town of the whole area, but all the major sites in Madrid on a Segway. You learn in 10 minutes how to drive a Segway. Now, my wife and I, neither of us are all that coordinated. Within 10 minutes, they had us up on them and learning how to do it, and we went with the guide all over. He took us to the markets. He took us to Retiro Park. He took us to the Prado Museum. He took us to all these. I would highly recommend. It's called the Segway Tours of Madrid. It's not expensive. It's a 2 or 3 hour tour, and you cover all of Madrid.
I mean, you
would love it. I would highly recommend it. And we stay a great place to stay there. There's a Westin Palace. It's gorgeous. It's on the west side of the. I think it's the west side of the city. I highly recommend it.
All right.
Highly recommend.
Mike, I appreciate the tips. Thanks very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Take care. One text saying it's too far to go for such a short time, and another texter from the 312 saying I should give the kids some space. See, those are the same people who say that you're a helicopter parent. If you just, I don't think there's anything wrong with taking a trip. Because here's the thing. If she wasn't over there, while I'm sure Madrid is a wonderful place, I don't know if it'd be at the top of my list to go, but now I have an incentive to go and visit a country that I may not see, you know, in the rest of my life. But I go over, I see her for a couple days. It doesn't cramp her weekends, so she can still go jetting about Europe or training or however she's going to get around Europe and do whatever she wants. And really, she's in class some of the, so, you know.
You'll be touring most of the time.
Right, during the day. We'll be touring. She'll be schooling.
Checking the sites without her. I mean, she's there. She knows what the sites are.
Yeah, and I don't think 4 days out of 4 months is cramping, is not giving her her space.
What other countries have you been to?
Mexico and Canada.
That's it? Oh, you've got to go.
We're going to the Dominican Republic in the spring.
You've got to go to
I got to go to Europe. I have a passport.
Yes.
Brand new passport, no stamps in it. I got to go somewhere.
That's useless, yeah.
Well, it's not useless. I'm ready to flee at a moment's notice.
But seriously, you got to go to... it's the best thing I ever did.
All right.
We went broke doing it, but it's the best thing I ever did.
All right, I got to do this, and then it'll be time for the news on WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Karen Conti will be here in an hour. She'll be answering your legal questions. Do you have a legal question? You know you do. Don't try to tell me you don't. 312-981-7200. Get them in early so Karen can answer them. Later in this hour, because Cody is a Pokemon genius, and I use the word Pokemon loosely, we've got a couple Pokemon stories. And then treats in the news, a brand new segment all about treats that are in the news. Wow. How does he come up with those titles? It must take him all of 7.3 seconds to name his segments. It does. Sometimes I do it faster because, you know, I don't really pay that much attention. All right. If you have a child in the Chicago public school system, I want to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Do you believe that the Chicago Teachers Union is acting like a bunch of babies, quite frankly? and not paying attention to the real world. And if you've listened to this show before, if you're an educator and you're going to call in all angry with me, if you've listened to this show in the past, and Roger will attest to this, I am firmly behind the teachers. I come from an education background. My dad worked for CPS. My mom taught for CPS. So I am always in the corner of teachers. I don't think teachers get paid enough. I don't think teachers get the respect they deserve. I know how much teachers have to sacrifice personally and financially to keep things going. That being said, there comes a time when your union leadership has to look at the realities of what's going on, not only in this city and this state, and make concessions accordingly. Now, we all know that there was a teacher strike averted last spring. The teachers have been working for a year without a contract. They've been negotiating in good faith with the city and CPS. I would have to believe that CPS is, you know, negotiating in good faith with them as well. Even though we know that in the past, when there's been talk of a strike, the mayor has not handled things as diplomatically as one would hope the mayor of a major metropolitan area would. He's been known to belittle and scream at Karen Lewis, who is no slouch herself when it comes to standing up for herself. All right, so they haven't had a contract for a year. Theoretically, they could have gone out on strike last spring, but they chose not to. Instead, the teachers decided to keep negotiating with the city. Forrest Claypool is now the CEO of the Chicago Board of Ed, the Chicago's Chicago Public Schools. He says the deal that they have on the table now, the deal that seemed to be agreed to in January, is the best deal that they're going to get. That deal includes a pay raise for the teachers. However, it also includes, and this is the sticking point, teachers would have to pay a 7% pension tab that the CPS now pays but no longer can afford. That was a concession to a contract back when Harold Washington was mayor. The CPS is still going to pay the employer share of pension costs, but they're asking the teachers to kick in and pay their employee part. They're basically saying, listen, you're giving us this raise and you're taking it away, so we're not getting anything. Most people who have a pension plan have to pay into it. That's the thing. You know, we look back, if you have a pension fund, I'm sure you're paying into it. That's what most people do. The teachers' union doesn't want to do that. And this is one time when I have to stop and look at the teachers' union and go, you got to face reality a little bit. It's unfortunate. Yes, it's unfortunate. But look at the financial realities of the city and the state. And what do you hope to accomplish? Now, once school starts, the teachers' union is going to have a lot more leverage with this strike because, and Roger, you can attest that you were still teaching in 2012, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
2012, a 9-day walkout.
Mm-hmm.
Parents and the public were pretty much behind the teachers at that point, going, hey, just give them what they want.
Right.
I don't think in this financial climate that's going to be the mood if, in fact, the teachers do go out on strike again.
Well, one of the more recent polls that was done for the union, this was a couple of months ago, showed an extremely strong support for teachers and for teachers going on strike.
Mm-hmm.
It was upwards of about 83%, I believe. So the sentiment is still very strong. I think one of the things that is very evident nowadays, and it may not have been in the past, but it's very evident that the public does understand on a grander scale and more evidently does understand what teachers do have to do and go through on an annual basis.
I hope that's the case. I don't know if it's as widespread as you may think it is. I hope that that's the case because a lot of, listen, and you know this, anytime mm-hmm. we talk about this, there's a lot of people who will say, hey, teachers get the summer off, teachers mm-hmm. da-da-da, they don't right. have to, you know, they're not paying Social Security, this and that. So there's people who either had a very bad experience with teachers when they mm-hmm. when they were at school, or just do not.
Or they don't have kids
right.
in the system.
They don't have kids in the system.
Right.
They've never been in a classroom. They don't understand. I do, right. and I always back the teachers. I'm mm-hmm. looking at this, and I'm thinking, this may be a time where you just have to bite the bullet, and you take this deal. And because while public sentiment may be behind it, if it comes down to the fact where, listen, what they're asking you is tough, and it's a tough sell.
Sure.
Now, Karen Lewis is quoting numbers and saying the vast majority of the union does not want to strike.
Well, nobody wants to strike. No,
But they also, you know, at some point she had made it seem like it was a done deal, and then
Originally it was favorable, but then the union started to look at the details.
Right.
And the details, which, and people need to understand, negotiating a contract is not just dollars and cents. There are myriad of other issues within a teacher's contract, like who is supposed to clean the classroom,
right,
which keeps it safe and sanitary for your children. What time do the teachers have to be there? How many meetings each day do they need to go to and not be in the classroom helping their children? Whole bunch of other things that need to be discussed and negotiated, including job security, which goes along with the salary, as the two main points of contention.
Right.
So that is why I think they went back and said, this isn't as good a deal as we originally thought.
Well, and that's why you have union, union people who will go over those contracts and come up and make recommendations to the rank and file. And now somebody's texting in, oh, you're very rude. You're saying the teachers don't make enough money, but then you're saying they should pay into their pension plan. What they make is one example, and I don't think it's two different things. I don't think I'm being rude by saying, listen, at some point you're going to have to face a reality that there's not that money. The state and the city don't have that money. CPS is almost bankrupt. Can we negotiate something else? Well, but at some point, you will lose sympathy, and this is what I'm afraid of, that you will lose the sympathy of the public, all the people who are paying into their own pensions. And that's anybody with a pension plan is paying in. So you've got to find something else.
Technically, and I'm not a financial wizard, which obviously shows in my bank book, but technically, teachers are paying into the pension because their salary, a portion of their salary is taken out and put into the pension. So let's say a person gets paid $50,000 a year, all right? A certain percentage of that $50,000 goes into the pension. Now, my understanding of what the negotiations involved right now is, we'll pay you $47,000 and you still have to put money into your pension. So there is a loss of salary, which includes the pension and your medical and all that other stuff.
The proposal offers a raise, and it keeps paying for seniority and education.
Yes.
But then the raise may be equal to what they're asking to give back for the pension. So that's the white wolf.
They're not. The last figure I heard and read about was that when you add everything and subtract everything, it's a 7% loss to teachers.
Right.
When you do the arithmetic.
Okay. Well, 312-981-7200. I don't think discussing something is rude. And when the texter is like, you're saying teachers shouldn't be compensated. I'm not saying that at all.
I don't know
what program you're listening to where you think I said the teacher should not be compensated.
You said they should be because of the job.
I said they should be, but I think they need to make more. I also think there needs to be a reality check amongst the union leadership to say, all right, this is the sticking point. The sticking point is the pension. All right, well, let's look around. If everybody else is having to do this, we need to figure out a way to negotiate this in the reality of the fact that CPS is almost broke and the state doesn't have any money and we have a governor who doesn't care. He's willing to put the CPS under privately run.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not going to be any help. So at some point, you have to look and see what you can do as the union leadership to make this happen. Because in the end, if you go on strike, you're hurting yourselves, obviously, and you're hurting the kids most of all. And I know neither side wants to hurt the kids, But in the end, that's what happened. So we have to look at the realities. I know we've got calls. We've got some more texts. We'll get to all of that on the other side. It's 720 WGN. This week on Chicago's Best, Brittany and Elliot beat the heat with some awesome cool treats. Don't miss this week's Chicago's Best Cool Treats tonight at 10 on WGN-TV. All right, we are talking about the potential for a teacher strike in Chicago. According to CPS, they have made their final offer. It's the best offer that they're going to get. CPS CEO Forrest Claypool said to the Tribune editorial board that the reality is, this is a quote, the reality is we do not have more to give than was offered in January. There is not a dollar surplus in this budget. That's the end of the quote. He also said the only other way around this is if the union wants to, quote, cut classrooms and jeopardize not only teachers' jobs, but more important, the academic progress of our kids. 312-981-7200. Melissa's been hanging on. She's in Chicago. Hi, Melissa. Welcome to WGN.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I love your Sunday show. I had just a quick comment. Of course, no teachers want a strike. You know what I mean? And they are often vilified when they, you know, try to call to light some of the things that are going on. But my point is, as a person who has kids in the public school system and who is in a family of public school teachers, there's always money, okay? Like, there's money to build charter schools that no one wants, okay? There's money to give $21 million that was approved on the contract to SUPS. You know, they don't even go after that. If there's no money, how does Barbara Bird Bennett slip $21 million past everyone on the board? If there might not be any more money now.
I mean, there may have been money before.
Go after that money. I mean, if they claim there's no money every year, and we find out that 2 years ago she just, and nobody noticed the $21 million that went to a contract where no principals were trained. So there's obviously money. That's what the teachers are always trying to say. There's not money for education. There's money for administration. There's money for cronies. There's money for, you know, for all these people that, you know, sort of grease each other's hands. But for actual education in the classroom, there's no money.
All right.
You know, there's always money.
Well, Melissa, good points.
I don't know how you just missed $21 million if you're bled dry.
Well, that's true, and I think that's, you know, that's why she's gone and Forrest Claypool is there, and we know the state is not helping as they used to. So things, you know, both sides are going to have points. We don't know.
We're going to find out that exact same thing is happening now. That, you know, we always hear about these people from these charter schools that are making $300,000 in backdoor deals for nothing.
Well, we'll see how it all shakes out. Now, so if it comes to this, Melissa, since you said you have kids in public schools, if it comes to the fact that the union says, you know what, we're not taking this deal and we are going to walk, does your sympathy still stay with the teachers?
It sure does.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Melissa.
It sure does.
Appreciate
those
the call.
Those are the actual educators.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about
you
that.
Know, the administrators
no doubt about that.
And the financial wizards that got us in this mess have nothing to do with education.
Right.
I will always support the people that educate our kids.
There you go. Thanks, Melissa. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, where's all that lottery money? That always comes up, doesn't it? We always, hey, where's all that lottery money? I buy my lottery tickets. Wasn't that supposed to go in tollways and education? Wasn't that where the lottery money was supposed to go?
Can I make just one point about the funds?
Listen, and you have not made any points tonight.
So
you've
sorry.
Been wildly quiet. I don't know if you want to jump in. Hold on. Let's talk to Don, then you can make your point.
Okay.
All right, Roger? All right?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll say hi to Don. Hi, Don.
Hi. I was listening in. I just have a couple quick points if I could make them. My sympathies do lie with teachers in one respect. I think, especially younger grades, or, you know, they work much longer hours than people say or think. But the reality of it is, like a lot of government pensions, those are defined benefits. And what people get paid when they retire in a pension does not equal it. It's the amount of money they contribute over the years in no way would qualify to get paid out the pension that gets paid out. So that's where the problem comes in, the shortfall. There's no way they ever contributed enough to get the pension that they get. Now, is that their fault? No, that's the fault of the politicians who
promised this to Gillette, you know. And when they first calculated all these numbers, it was during the 1990s when the stock market was returning ridiculous rates of return. Well, they used that number to calculate future values for the next 10, 20 years. And as you know, there's no way you're going to guarantee yourself
definitely not
return anymore. So do you, if you want to continue to give them the pensions that are promised, then they are going to have to pay another 10, maybe 15% of their paycheck to get those pensions, because there's just not the money there for those pensions. In reality, in private industry, pensions are less than half of what a government pension is, and that's because those numbers add up. The amount of money that people contribute for a pension, you get a decent rate of return. When you retire, it equals X amount of dollars a year in the pension.
Right.
In the government, you contribute X amount, you get a rate of return, and you get three times X amount in a pension. It just doesn't add up. I mean, no matter where your loyalties lie, it just, the math just doesn't add up. And until people realize that, you know, you have to be honest with the numbers. It doesn't lie.
Well, that's, and the numbers are the problem. Don, thanks for the call. All right, Roger, I give you, you got a minute because then I want to get to Katie's, a perspective from outside Chicago.
All right, two things. Real fast. There are several different funds within the Chicago public schools. Paying for teachers is one small fund. They cannot take money from building schools or repairing schools or buying technical equipment and put that in where the teachers are getting paid. Second thing, the teachers feel slighted because 10 years ago, it's more than 10 years now, teachers were asked by the state and the city, can you give us a little break? We can't pay you the pension money now because we have to move the money over to help the state. Mm-hmm. And so for 10 years, the state and city did not pay their share of the pension into the teachers' pension fund. That's why we have the hundreds of millions of dollars of the pension fund in the hole. The teachers are still paying into their pension now, and the city just made their last pension payment to try to bring it up to date. That's where the big hole is in the budget. That's the biggest hole.
All right, let's get an out of Chicago perspective. Katie is in Rockford, one of the most dangerous cities in the world.
Yeah, this is a sensitive subject because, you know, I have six kids. They're all grown and educated, but a lot of the teachers, and I live in Rockford,
okay?
And my two youngest kids went to private school. But anyway, a lot of teachers in this area and down in southern Illinois, that they all feel that Chicago gets a bigger share of the education money than other places.
Mm-hmm.
And also with the pension. Now, the way I understood this several years ago, it got all messed up with the pension. The state says, oh, that's okay. We'll pay your pension. We have been told here that the teachers don't pay into the pension, that the state pays their pension and they don't have to pay it. And there's so many parents in that, which I agree too. This is ridiculous that they have kids going back to school in the middle of August. All our kids went to school back after Labor Day. And all these holidays that these teachers get paid for, it's ridiculous. Like Pulaski Day. These kids don't know anymore about
Pulaski. Well, those are state holidays. You know, state offices are closed.
Wait a minute. But the teachers are the ones
Katie, unfortunately, I got to get to the news. I'm not trying to cut you off. I got to get to the news. But every job, thank you for the call, every job has paid holidays. Most jobs have paid holidays. So I don't begrudge a teacher being off on Pulaski Day. Schools are closed. That's the way it goes. That's, you know, and we'll see. Now, classes are supposed to start September 6th. So we'll keep our fingers crossed and see if that is, in fact, the case. All right, we'll do the news in a minute on WGN. You all settled down now, Roger?
I'm always settled.
No, I know. Listen, you had a long run with the CPS. So
yeah, 20 years.
You know what's going on in there.
Well, I mean,
My mom's, you know, retired.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad retired from CPS, so I got no problem with this. Somebody said, well, what other job, the teachers, do you get Pulaski Day off? So I looked it up. Libraries are closed.
Mm-hmm.
Courts are closed,
mm-hmm,
except for bond court. City and county offices are all closed. So a lot of people get the day off for Pulaski Day.
It's not just teachers. It's Pulaski Day.
Pulaski Day. Not to be confused with Punchki Day, which I like a lot better.
Well, because
not that I have anything against.
Right.
Pulaski. People are going, what's he got against Casimir Pulaski?
Nothing.
I just like treats for my holidays. Yeah. That's what I want. Hey, treats in the news coming up very soon. All right. Cody met up with 7,000 Spaniards to play Pokemon. Is that what I am led to believe?
This is true.
Pokemon Go. 7,000 Spaniards.
Is that seven?
On a small street.
7,000?
Was there 7,000 Spaniards?
Was it 7?
I just like the sound of that sentence. 7,000 Spaniards. It's like the song for Willie Nelson's Seven Spanish Angels, but 7,000 Spaniards. How many were there when you played Pokemon Go?
At least 3,000 in the center of Madrid, so kind of like their Times Square.
Were you causing some, is there traffic over there? Do they have vehicles in Spain?
They do.
They do. Other than the Segways that
yes.
that Mike told me to ride?
There are, in fact, cars. And an amazing public transit system.
Is that right?
Incredible.
So did you and your 3,000-some-odd friends block up streets? Were you like some sort of protest?
I don't think it really caused a traffic jam. The exit of the metro station was a bit hard to you know, there's a zillion people right there.
A zillion.
Kind of congested.
Wait a minute, 7,000 to a zillion?
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a jump, and I thought I had exaggerated by about 5%. Now Cody takes it to a zillion. A zillion Spaniards.
You're the one that took
It was a great underground band that I listened to back in Carbondale.
Oh, wait, there's
Brazilian
a
Spaniards.
I found a news article on it, and it says more than 3,000 players. So
okay.
My estimate was what they're reporting.
Well, that's good.
I'm so good at guesstimating.
You are. Plus, I know you had a lot of time over there when you weren't drinking sangria, so you just walked around and counted everybody.
I mean,
sound off.
I won't deny
2,912.
It got more and more fun the more I counted.
Well, I have nothing against Pokemon Go players. Because
do you?
I don't care. I saw a bunch of them today in the park right by. I live a block from a park, and as I was walking the dog, there's, you know, Pokemon Go, and it's nice because I see people who have it don't look like they've walked outside for a long time. They have mushrooms coming out of their backs and things. They've been in the dark, so they're out in the sunlight, and I'm all for that. Go on and get your Pokemon. So I have two different stories: one, a Pokemon feel good story, and one that makes you realize that some people who play Pokemon Go may, in fact, be unbalanced. Which would you like to hear first?
Let's go unbalanced.
Unbalanced. All right. Woman tells police she was violated by a Pokemon Go character after she felt an assault and the virtual reality game detected the creature in her bedroom. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, no. This story?
Yes. You know this story?
I'm not saying, oh, no, we shouldn't talk about it, because we totally should, but it's...
You heard this?
It's pretty wild.
A young woman has lodged a formal complaint that she has been violated by a Pokemon. I'm not using the R word, because there's children outside the Allstate Showcase studio. Hello, children.
Because officially she did use that word.
She used the R word.
She actually said that.
That she was and then...
By a Pokemon.
Who would do that? Which Pokemon would do that? Which Pokemon would have the audacity to violate a woman?
Tentacruel.
Oh, is that a real Pokemon?
Lickitung.
Definitely. Lickitung, definitely. But what was the first one? Tentacruel. Yeah, that sounds like a probing, horrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
She told officers that she had been assaulted in the worst way by a giant Pokemon in her apartment in the Russian capital of Moscow. The married woman, whose name has not been released, good, because imagine the embarrassment. She had reportedly been playing Pokemon Go before she fell asleep. She claimed that she woke up to find a huge Pokemon lying on top of her body. You know it was her husband in a mask. Pay no attention to me. I'm virtually real. No, you're not. I feel your tentacles. The Pokemon was lying on top of her and says it was assaulting her. She says monsters can be found and captured in cities and towns across the globe. Well, you knew that. The woman says the Pokemon disappeared when she jumped out of bed. Yeah, because it wasn't real. Is that a spoiler alert? That it wasn't real? Pokemon disappeared when she jumped out of bed, but says the Pokemon Go app on her phone could still detect the same virtual character's presence on her bed. This is like one of those weird horror movies, isn't it? Like when the house is possessed, like the Amityville Horror. The Pokemon is in your bedroom. Chargator is on your pants. Is that one, Chargator?
No.
Charizard. Or Charmander.
Oh, Charmander. That's what I was thinking of. Charmander.
Mm.
That's the little one.
Well, sure, then he'd be easy to... Well, all right, so which would... All right, fitting this description, mm-hmm. you two Pokemon Go players, a huge Pokemon. Who would be the huge Pokemon that may have been lying atop her?
Well, it could have been Charizard. That's a pretty big
Well,
Pokemon.
You just told me he was a tiny one.
Charmander.
Oh, Charmander's a little one. Yeah, Charizard?
Charizard. That's Charizard. Charmander being evolved to Charizard.
All right.
Very good.
Thank you, sir.
I'm impressed. Roger dropping Pokemon knowledge. I would have guessed Snorlax.
Snorlax.
Sure, really
he's sleeping.
Big.
He's gigantic.
Yeah.
All right, so...
And that's all he does.
Would Snorlax have that in him?
Oh, I don't...
That sort of evil?
The laying down, yeah.
On top of someone?
Yeah.
And then... Gyrating?
Well,
Pokemon Go-ish?
I don't think Snorlax gyrates. He doesn't have snoring.
It's
well, listen, we need to start weeding out suspects because okay. I want to mount a full investigation. Mount, I didn't use that.
Nice.
Oh.
Thank you. That was not meant to, pun non intended. She woke up to tell her husband what had happened, who told police officers that he did not believe her and told her to go see a psychiatrist. That's exactly what I would have done. If my wife woke me up and went, a Pokemon Go character is touching me inappropriately, I said, you need to see a psychiatrist. Get out of here. Because first of all, the bed is not big enough for you, me, the dog, and a Pokemon character. So Pokemon has got to go. The woman's friend, the Russian news website, Blocknot. Which, doesn't that sound like a Russian news agency? Blocknot. Except for Russian news, it would be block everything, wouldn't it?
That sounds more German.
Blachmach.
Blachmach.
Anyway, they report that the police did not believe her either. Shocking. And that the woman then went to see a psychic who was also unable to help her.
She misheard psychiatrist.
So she went to psychic.
Yeah.
And tried to channel the whatever Pokemon Go character had been a topper.
Topper is not the name of a Pokemon.
It's not? She says there are too many Pokemon at her place, and even the dog can sense them. Again, this isn't real, right? You guys know this. Even you guys who play it, they're not real. They're not like all the guys at the park that are running around my neighborhood looking for these Pokemon. They're not real, so they're not going to climb atop you.
No, and begin they can't to, hurt you.
What if? Oh, but what if 9 months from now she gives birth to a Charmander?
Ooh.
Half Charmander, half crazy Russian woman. That would be then she would be vindicated, wouldn't she? As the doctor pulls it out of there.
A little fire coming out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Fire coming out of his mouth.
See? Yeah. I told you. Who needs to see a psychiatrist now?
Yeah.
Well, you still do. Because you willingly slept with a Charmander. She says the dog barks whenever she plays Pokemon Go. Yes, because the dog needs to go out and get fed, and all you're doing is playing Pokemon Go.
But you can do it while you're out walking.
Obviously not. Oh. She's very sleepy and has to lay down, and then the Pokemon Go people just lie atop her.
Maybe she's being hypnotized by a Jinx.
A what? Is that a Pokemon?
Yeah, or a Drowsy.
Know that anytime you reference... A Pokemon, I will have absolutely no idea.
That's how we're educated.
Unless you say Pikachu.
Right. Well, no,
I know Pikachu
doesn't. Pikachu
wouldn't do it, would he?
No.
I've got to give an update on my little Madrid Pokemon Go meetup.
Oh, do you?
Because I did some searching, and because you were throwing out 7,000, then I found the one that was 3,000 to 5,000. Apparently, that was a world record Pokemon Go gathering.
Wow.
Really?
Apparently, I was part of the world record-setting Pokemon Go meetup in Madrid.
And unfortunately, there are no medals given out during this Olympic season for your craziness.
And that is not fair.
It's not fair.
I was
even in the wrong country.
Man, not even close to Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
I would have taken a medal for Spain.
For being part of Pokemon?
Yeah, one. And
Pokemon
this says
Go.
The Mirror.co.uk reports between 5,000 and 7,000 people.
And if you can trust any foreign newspaper, it is definitely The Mirror.
.co.uk.
.co.uk, because you can get all the wonderful stories. I think this came from dailymail.co.uk. Anyway, his friend eventually accepted her husband's advice in desperation and had booked an appointment to see a psychiatrist.
Not a psychic, a
psychiatrist. But in Russia, maybe they're the same thing.
Is there such thing as a psychiatrist?
A psychiatrist? Like a kayak paddler?
Like a what?
Your thought caught in my throat. A psychic chiatrist. What is a psychic chiatrist?
I don't know, like an analrapist, maybe.
All right, we have another Pokemon Go story. I want to get this quickly because then we have to go to treats in the news. This is what it's all about, Pokemon Go. Two Pokemon Go players who helped Chicago police nab a would-be laptop thief at a Northwest Side high school. They did it earlier this week. We applaud them. Adrian Rugala, 22, said he and a friend were playing Pokemon Go. This is the only part that I found a little odd. They were playing at about midnight on Monday. I don't think that's a good time to be wandering around people's neighborhoods.
Why?
It's too late during the week to just be wandering about. You're going to draw suspicion to yourself. Something may happen to you. Perhaps you run upon a burglary. So anyway, he and his friend were playing Pokemon Go near the Chicago Academy High School about midnight when they saw a man crouch behind a bush, pull on a mask and gloves, and take out a metal stick. Is that a profile for any Pokemon Go character?
No.
No. So they knew they were seeing an actual live human being.
Yeah.
All right. I'm just checking because it's altered reality.
Most Americans know the difference. It's Russia you got to worry about.
Are we going to go with most Americans? Can we go with a percentage of Americans know the difference?
Some
Americans. Let's go with some. That's some. Way high.
Too
Let's
high?
Go some, yeah. Okay. Let's go some Americans okay. know the difference. You've been out and about lately. Let's go with some.
Some. Yeah.
I'm hesitant to even throw you some, but I'll do it. Just in the name of peace and harmony. He just started smashing windows. We were right there, not even 10 feet from him. I told my friend, we've seen too much. It's time to go.
Wow.
So Rugala and his 25-year-old pal crossed the street and called 911. The cops arrived and they arrested 24-year-old Daniel Gonzalez, who was on probation for retail theft, possession of a stolen motor vehicle, and two separate burglary cases. He has a long history of drug abuse, according to his lawyer, and was high on Xanax. So there he goes. He rode up to school on a motorized bicycle, broke open windows using a metal pry bar, and then police found him on the first floor where he confessed to trying to steal things. And also then tried to convince them he was Charmander. And said, this is not real. I am a Charmander.
All I can hear in my head is if a local TV news station had picked up this story,
yeah,
and the terrible headlines they would say. One man went out to catch Pokemon Go, but he caught a burglar or
what
whatever.
What these men caught instead,
right,
will shock you.
Thanks,
and then that
BuzzFeed.
little drum sound behind it.
Dun, 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 dun. Breaking yeah. news. Man crouches in the bushes. Pokemon Go hunters found him. Did they make him a rug or their prey? All right, let's do this. That is, yes. Where's our dramatic music? We need dramatic. We almost, that's almost Storm Central.
Don't you have
oh, yeah.
I don't know. Let's do this. Karen Conti will be here after 8 o'clock. She'll be answering your legal questions. Start formulating those questions and get them in early. All right. I told you we had some stories about treats. I am in a treat type of mood this morning. The one thing my daughter said in the few short hours that she's been in our house since she arrived back in town on Wednesday was, oh, one day before I go back, before I leave for Spain, I would like to get some of those chocolate donuts that we had last time. Have you ever been to Weber's Bakery on Archer Avenue? Oh, they're consistently voted when the Trib or anybody else does these stories about the best donuts in Chicago. They're always in the top 5 or 10 donuts. You know, you get Glazed and Infused and sure. Donut Vault and Stands and Do Right, all the great donut places. But this place has been around for I think 50 some years. It's a bakery on Archer Avenue, like Archer and Harlem. And they're known for their chocolate donuts. It's all about the fudge icing on these chocolate donuts. So, who's a good dad? I'm a good dad. Plus, I'm a sucker for a donut. So this morning, I get up at 5 to 6, and I go to the bakery. Because this place, if you get there any time after 7, forget about it. The line's out the door. So I'm at the bakery at 6:05. And I get her these donuts. And of course I had to have a couple. So now I'm in a treat kind of mood.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's not good for me, but you know, every once in a while, a guy's just got to have a chocolate donut with his coffee. That's just how it is. That's life.
As long as you don't make a, like, daily habit of it.
Yeah, I didn't eat the whole dozen.
Yeah, right.
I had a couple.
Okay.
So now I'm my body is ready for some treats, and I see this story and I'm like, oh, this sounds horrible, America. And yet I can't wait to wander in and get some. Hostess is launching a deep fried Twinkie as its first frozen treat.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Deep-fried Trinkie is coming from the State Fair right to your house, America. Hostess Brands is launching packaged deep-fried Twinkies starting Friday that mark its first foray into frozen foods. That's a lot of alliteration, and I enjoy that sentence. The cream-filled snack in vanilla or chocolate is the result of a year-long collaboration between Hostess and Walmart. Who knew two titans of industry would collide and instead of trying to work on world hunger or world peace or just shutting people up about politics for 10 minutes, they come up with... Let's do the deep-fried Twinkie and freeze it. Oh, fantastic. Both companies look to spark food sales with innovative products. Battered and partially fried before being frozen, which is how I want to go out. I think it might... Put that in my
battered
will, Cody.
Battered and frozen.
Battered, frozen. battered and partially fried, and then you can freeze me. And someday you'll thaw me out and go, man, this is a tasty treat from the past. Twinkies need to be finished for a short time in the oven, toaster oven, or frying pan. Going to cost you $4.76 for a box of seven, and for the first 3 months are only going to be available at Walmart. As if there weren't enough reasons to go to Walmart. As if Walmart was not the bastion of all consumerism. Now, not only am I going to save money on my laundry detergent and wonder if people are making enough money, while I'm doing it, I have to go and get some deep-fried Twinkies in a box.
Here's what I want to know.
Huh?
Once they start selling them.
Yeah.
How many
How will they stop?
No.
That's the question.
Yeah, no.
They won't.
How many will actually be brought to the counter to be bought? And not consume.
Well, you can't.
At
you
the
have.
Shelf.
You have to finish. You didn't listen. You have to finish them up. You have to finish cooking them in the oven, toaster oven, or frying pan.
I don't think that's going to stop many people from.
I see me gnawing on a frozen one just in the car like a dog. Just a frozen Twinkie drool just down my chest. My shirt just covered in goo like I'm a baby who can't take his sauce. So baby sauce is baby.
What are those big things that you can deep fry the turkeys in?
Oh, Fry Daddy.
Yeah, those Fry Daddies.
They'll
have it out like at a football game.
Yes,
you know, out in the parking lot. They can't wait to go home.
I'm going to rent a pickup truck. I'm going to have the oil boiling in the parking lot. And I won't even clear the door, and I will forward pass my box of Twinkies to my accomplice in the back of said pickup truck.
Yeah.
That accomplice will have a placard, so he's parked in a handicap spot, because I don't want to have to walk all the way down the aisle to get there. I'm going to have a legitimate person with a legitimate handicap placard park the pickup truck in a handicap spot. When I walk out, I will fling it to them. Now, I do not have a placard, not my vehicle. Mm-hmm. I'm not violating any laws.
Oh, okay.
So I'll be good, because that is a horrible thing.
Right.
If I can't find someone with a placard, I will have to walk down the aisle. I know, but I'm thinking speed and efficiency. That's how then I launch it in. Most of our customers have a desire to eat healthier, said said somebody from Walmart while he was laughing hysterically. But at the end of the day, it has to taste good. Great healthy things that don't taste good don't do well. This will have 9 grams of fat and 220 calories. The vanilla flavor of the deep-fried Twinkie compares to 4 grams of fat and 130 calories for a regular Twinkie. So imagine every deep-fried Twinkie is really eating 2 Twinkies and just, oh my, get some expandable pants and just sit in a chair and watch yourself expand, because I'll be right next to you, America. It sounds delicious. What? What are you looking at?
I'd rather eat 2 Twinkies.
Would you really? You haven't tried one of these yet.
But then you get double the time. Like, if I have a choice between 10 bites of something that I know is delicious and 5 bites of something that is maybe a little more delicious.
Yeah, but you don't know how much more. This could be exponentially more delicious.
Exponentially.
Exponentially. Because
more
it
than...
is coated.
Mm-hmm.
It is fried. Frying makes everything better.
Uh-huh.
Coated usually makes things better. So, I'm going to stick with a deep-fried Twinkie is going to be exponentially better than a regular Twinkie.
I feel like there's a tipping point with food. Because,
all right.
To me, it's
sure,
like...
when you eat so much, you tip over. That's one point.
That's one of them, but...
Hey, I'm so full of Twinkies.
Yeah, go ahead.
I know I've been gone for a few weeks, but this man, tonight, you just...
He was saving it up for you.
Joey was frightened by these voices the last couple weeks. When the voices would come out, Joey panicked. I think he put a call into our non-existent HR department. And I said to him, you know, the chances of you getting somebody in the HR department,
right,
the same chances as getting violated by a Pokemon Go character in Moscow.
Well, HR doesn't know we're still on the air.
Nope.
They haven't thought we've had a show in years.
Ooh,
but here's my thing.
Under the radar.
Exponential taste only goes so far. For example, a $5 burger is not necessarily a third as good as a $15 burger. You know what I'm saying?
Your logic doesn't hold up because
logic.
we have not tried this yet.
Deep fried Twinkie is serious.
Has nothing to do with
rarely.
The deep fried Twinkie.
Oh, price always has everything to do with it.
Not with this. Mm. Not with this.
No.
$4.76 for a box of seven, which is an odd amount for a box of treats.
Is it?
Yeah. Go 6, 8, 12. Well, seven? Who puts seven in a box?
Well, after they box originally fit 12, but so after they did the frying and battering, you can't fit the 12 anymore.
Of course not.
They didn't want to waste the boxes.
Right.
Already had those.
Here's other good treat news. Girl Scouts have announced a new s'mores cookie.
Oh.
It's going to be added to the 2017 lineup.
Oh.
Yep. S'mores has deep roots in Girl Scout history. Girl Scouts have been enjoying s'mores around campfires for generations. So there you go. It is going to be a crunchy graham sandwich cookie with creamy chocolate and marshmallowy filling. The other, and then it's covered with chocolate. So there you go. That's delicious. Think about that. Salivate. Get your legal questions together. We'll do this. Then it's news time. WGN. On 720 WGN, and it is after 8 o'clock on a Sunday. That means that your legal help has arrived. Karen Conti is here, as she always is on Sunday nights, to help you out. 312-981-7200 is how you get your legal questions answered by Karen. Good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I am dandy.
Great.
I'm just contemplating life and watching my daughter have a wonderful, exotic life. And
I can't even keep track of where
she's going. Very busy.
She's very busy. You know, she's been more places in the last 3 months than I think I've been in 5 years.
Well, you guys travel. You listen. You're the one who you guys are jet setters.
Well, the problem is when you have
who's Jerry?
When you have the money, you don't have the time, and then when you have the time, you don't have the money. That's always been the story of my life. So,
well, listen, isn't the point of having the money so you can make the time? I mean, you've made the money. Can't you make the time?
Right. But when, you know, you do what I do for a living, it's just when people need you, you got to be there. I mean,
right.
You can't just say, I'm going to send somebody else or I'm not going to be there. You got a court appearance. I got to be there.
That's the way it is.
You know what? As my mother used to say to me, it could be worse. You could be digging ditches.
You could be. And somebody who's digging
ditches
is like, it's a hard job.
It is a hard job.
But
noisy.
I'm betting nobody gets called honey, darling, or sweetie, or, any sort of endearing name like that while they're digging ditches. But I guess, according to what I read this week, this is happening to attorneys all over.
I didn't see this. This is new to me.
So you've never been in court and had a judge go, listen, baby, I think we got this handled.
No, I really have. I have been in court where I've been called all different kinds of endearing names like that. I once had a judge talk to the jury while I was selecting a jury and say one woman was pregnant. And he said, that's the way I like my women, barefoot and pregnant.
I'm sorry.
And that was in a sexual harassment case.
Well, that judge doesn't seem to quite get the concept, does he?
No, he didn't. But the case was settled because I couldn't take any chances that the jury, thought, gosh, the judge is saying that kind of stuff. How illegal could it be?
Right, exactly. Well, the reason I brought this up is the American Bar Association this week, just this week, not in 1958, this week decided that calling a female honey or darling is not appropriate in a courtroom or other professional settings. Harassment and discrimination in the practice of law are now considered a breach of professional responsibility and grounds for potential discipline. That because of passage of a new ABA ethics rule at its annual meeting in San Francisco.
Well, glory be.
Wouldn't you have thought that would... That was something that would have been passed a long time ago?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting. I mean, lawyers do get held to a higher standard, and they should, because we're upholders of the law, and we're officers of the court, and we're taking care of people at bad times in their lives. But, you know, during the course of our lives, you know, people say all kinds of things. I mean, I've been called really bad names by male attorneys in depositions. Oh, yes. And that are completely misogynist in nature. And I hear racial things all the time. Lawyers are not immune from this kind of behavior. But I think it's good that we have rules like this because I think that we should be held to a higher level.
I do, too. Yeah. I'm just shocked that it took so long. It's 2016, and now the ABA has finally decided, you know, we probably... You shouldn't let people call women that kind of stuff.
You know, and again, I think that, I don't know how other women in view this, but having been a lawyer for 30 years and it started out, I think, you know, I was maybe a little sensitive to that kind of stuff. But generally speaking, if someone calls me that and they're doing it in a way that just that's where they're coming from and that's their generation, I sort of forgiving of that. It's when someone calls me the B word or someone says something that is sexist in nature, then that's when I have the problem. Again, maybe none of this should be tolerated.
Right.
But for me, it doesn't offend me if someone's being nice to me.
Does it give you an edge when somebody makes a comment like that? Because you're like, man, they have no other comprehension of what to do, so now I can dominate them.
No, not at all.
Really? See, I would view them as weak.
I just think that some people, you know, are offended by different things. I had a judge one time, every time I was in court, he would compliment me on something, how I looked, you know, how I looked fit or I looked this way. And I thought to myself, okay, that's nice, but I'm sure it made a lot of people uncomfortable in the courtroom, including my opponent, who wasn't getting like treatment.
Exactly.
And so,
what about me?
You know,
hey, you look like a slob. Huh?
Right. So I think that to keep it politically correct is probably a good thing.
Especially in court.
It's such a formal place.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like a place for, you know, those kind of compliments.
It's a formal place, and even my friends who are judges will call me Ms. Conti, because that's the way you're supposed to act in court.
Exactly. Right, we have this text that came in a long time ago. We're getting calls to 312-981-7200 if you want to get a legal question answered by Karen. This one, in 2013, I was extremely ill and ran up over $500,000 in medical expenses, most of which were covered by Blue Cross Blue Shield. I recently received a bill from the hospital for an additional amount that Blue Cross Blue Shield told the hospital it paid in error. This amount appears to be the difference between the amount billed by the hospital and the negotiated amount under my BCBS plan. Can you tell me what is the statute of limitations for such medical expenses and, if applicable, whether I would be liable for this new charge?
Yeah, you probably are going to be liable unless you can talk the provider into to backing down. Just because a hospital or a doctor doesn't send the bill right away or just because you don't know that it's unpaid right away doesn't mean that you didn't receive the services and the services weren't billed properly.
Okay.
So, you know, there's 10 years to collect on a debt in that if it's a breach of contract, and that's what this would probably be. An oral contract would be 5 years. Under any statute of limitations, I think you're going to be liable. But again, you can call them, or better yet, write them and say, you know, this is 3 years old.
Right.
I was told I didn't have to pay it. I based, you know, some decisions on that.
Right.
And it's unfair to give me that amount and see if they'll forgive it. You know, I don't know if they will.
Or negotiate it down.
Or try to negotiate or pay it over time.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Good luck. Let's get to the phone, shall we? We tell people to call early. They do. Let's reward them. Mary is in Schaumburg. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. I have also another medical question. My brother was a Vietnam vet. He passed away last year. He was in the hospital for 5 months before he, passed away. And the, being 100% disabled, the veterans picked up the majority of the bill, but his house went into foreclosure, and I think there's still some medical bills, and they're trying to come after me for that. And in fact, the Cook County Sheriff came to the door, but I didn't answer just this week. Am I liable for my brother's bills?
Absolutely not. Here's the complication in this. You are not responsible for your relatives, your parents, any of those bills. In some circumstances, you might be liable for your spouse's bills, but that's not the case here. The only complication in this is, I don't know if your brother had an estate. Did he have any assets that he left to you? Because if he did and they had any value, then you were required to pay his debts prior to taking that money. So let's say that he had $100,000 in a bank account. I doubt he did. But if he did, then you would have to, as the recipient or the heir, would have to pay off his debts before you took that money. Now, is that the case?
No, he didn't have. Again, the house went into foreclosure. In fact, it's in foreclosure right now. It took over a year for it to, you know, to get to this point.
Okay. Well, what I would do, and I don't know what the sheriff is trying to serve you with. Does the sheriff not know that he is deceased? That could that be?
I didn't answer.
So, I mean, I think I would take the whatever they're trying to serve you, try to figure out what it is, and write a letter to whoever is trying to get money from you. Maybe they're trying to get money from him, and they don't know he's deceased. Maybe they think there's an estate out there, and you're going to have to tell them there isn't. But all of this should be done in writing so they don't continue to harass you if that's what they're doing.
They can't garnish my wages at all, can they?
No, no. In fact, this is something that everyone should know. People think that someone who is a creditor can just go ahead and garnish wages.
Right.
You have to do a lot of things first. You have to serve the person with a lawsuit. You have to go to court. You have to get a judgment against that person. And then you have to garnish. Oh. And you give notice to everybody.
It's not just they can't just call your job and go, hey, we need some of our money.
No. No, there's a very formal process, and for people who ignore your mail and your service of process and your summons and your sheriffs, then maybe you're at that point, but you would certainly know before that happened.
Yeah. Good luck, Mary.
Good luck, Mary.
Hope it works out. Yep, bye-bye. Yeah, so again, because we've had questions like this all the time, just to reiterate before we go to break, you're not responsible for family members' debts.
You are not.
Okay.
But, and I want to reiterate, this was, I knew this probably wasn't the case, but I really want to make sure that if you're the heir, okay, and you know that the guy who died had a bunch of debts, but he also had a bunch of assets, you can't just take the assets and not pay
them
off.
Right, the debts have to be paid first, and then you get whatever's left
That's
over.
Correct.
All right, very good. Karen Conti's here. She's answering your legal questions. 312-981-7200. Get them in as fast as possible. But as always, people will wait. How do people get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
More with Karen on the other side. It's WGN. Chicago Tribune delivers the stories that make the city with more journalists at work than any other local news source. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. Karen Conti is here. She's answering your legal questions at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That is the phone number. That is the text number. And let's go to Rhoda in Chicago. Is she ready, Cody? No, Cody is still talking to Rhoda. We're going to wait for her. So I haven't talked to you since Rod Blagojevich went back to court. And Patty petitioned the court, and the daughters cried, and Rod is the... No go. He's serving it all.
It didn't surprise me whatsoever.
Really?
Well, just because this is a resentencing. This is not a reconsideration. I mean, the appellate court did strike five counts. But in the way the law is set up, Brian, is that the sentencing guidelines apply to each of the counts that he was convicted on, meaning that if you take away five, you still have 25 years, 30 years, 25 years, 15, you still have the same amount of time for each individual count. So if he had just gotten convicted on one, he could have still gotten the same sentence. So just because you lose a few accounts doesn't mean you lose a few years. And Blagojevich was properly sentenced. The judge is a very no-nonsense, very tough-on-crime judge, probably one of the, you know, the worst, the best judges over there if you're a prosecutor, the worst judges over there if you're a defense lawyer.
All right.
And why would he change? I mean, just because someone changes in jail, he's doing a good job, excuse me, with other prisoners and all that. That's good. I'm glad he's doing that. That's a happy thing. But if every prisoner who did good in jail, you know, did good, got out early, that's not the way it works. Unfortunately, I think in some cases, but. You know, unless there's a pardon or a commutation, I just don't think he's going to get a break.
So you were surprised initially at the length of that sentence,
I
right?
I was. Oh, absolutely.
So the sentence was, in your opinion, was long at the beginning, but it didn't surprise you now that he didn't get...
I mean, we see the way of the world with the federal judges, and what did Ryan get, 8 years? And we thought that was phenomenally long for what he did. And Blagojevich never got any money in his pocket, ever, you know, and was it horse trading? Was it all of those things together? You know, 14 years is a long time.
Yeah.
I say this all the time, Brian, but it is to be in a jail cell with a prisoner or being, you know, visiting a prisoner for one day is an eternity.
Ugh.
And to think about
imagine.
The years that you're there, I don't care if it's an easy place to be, easy meaning the minimum security, you're away from your family, there's rules that you have to follow, there's no good food, there's no good health care, there's no hair dye.
No.
You know, you have, it's a long time to be there. And I don't wish that on anyone. And I just don't think Blagojevich is a terror to society. I think doing what the time that he did, he probably learned his lesson. He was probably humbled, and he could probably come out now and still be of use to his family and to society. But I just think it's unfair.
Do judges ever consider, I mean, Patty Blagojevich sent the letter, the daughters were there testifying. Do judges ever take that into account, or is it pretty much just, hey, the law is the law? This is the way it goes. Sorry.
Well, I think this judge addressed it and said, you know what, I feel bad for you people, but listen, this is as a result of what Blagojevich did. And
right.
I've said this over and over again. I think that it's harder for somebody outside the prison system when a family member goes in, it's harder on the family than it is on the person who goes in.
Right.
And that doesn't sound like it would make sense, but the person who goes in has a new environment, they have a new routine, they have new, quote, friends, they have a new, you know, set of rules that they're following, and they don't like it, it's not great, but it's okay for them because they're used to it. The family never gets used to not having a dad.
Right.
Daughters never get used to dad not being there for all of the events in their lives, so he's always going to be a void in their lives, whereas Blagojevich has his own new routine.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not making light of what he's going through, but and I guess my point would be that, again, judges don't really consider the collateral damage to the family, because if they did, we have a lot of people who are really evil human beings who miss the people who went in jail and would rather not have them in jail.
Exactly. All right, let's get back to the phones. Karen Conti is here, 312-981-7200, answering your legal questions. Rhoda's in Chicago. Hi, Rhoda, you're on WG.
Okay, thank you very much. My family and I came back from a very short vacation, and we found that my condo had been flooded from the apartment above, and the super of the building got up there, and he turned off the water, and we all saw that the water was coming through the ceiling. In the meantime, we have tried to contact the management, which is a huge multi-million dollar company, who manages many condos, and they have not been forthcoming with any information at all. And they wanted to arrange a meeting with me. I'm an elderly person. I don't drive or anything. And I didn't want their people coming into my apartment and seeing it. So in the meantime, I have a rec apartment, and it did not go in the kitchen, however. And
Rhoda, excuse me for interrupting, but there was a person who was living above you whose water was on.
That person passed away and gave their apartment to another family member who is a big businessman who lives out of town. And
what I'm asking is, this wasn't a common area that was leaking. It was another residence unit that was leaking into yours, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So,
however, the water was coming from the common area into their apartment. The line that went into their bathroom was coming from the common area. So
okay.
We got no help from the owner of the apartment. He will not divulge his insurance company and the condo. Who have given years and years of assessment money is not helping either in this matter.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Do you have insurance?
I have insurance, but it's a little bit difficult because the insurance company is Illinois Fire Plan, and I only got to them because about 3 years ago the same incident happened before, and I'm supposed to have a 3 year without any
incidents?
With any new incidents.
Okay. So Rhoda, I know that we're running short on time here, but the first thing you do is you report it to your insurance carrier. If you're going to tell me that they're going to not give you coverage for it, I don't understand that.
They no longer take your things over the phone. You have to do everything on the internet. So I'm a little bit old. I haven't gotten to it yet.
Well, if you have a wrecked apartment, you can't live in it, and you've got thousands of dollars of damage, you can find someone maybe at your public library who can help you, or a family member or somebody who can get online. Can't possibly be that you can't make a claim without a computer. You can call your insurance adjuster, your insurance agent.
They say on their site now They're not accepting anything in writing. Everything must be on a computer.
Okay. Jeez. That doesn't sit right with me because that doesn't make any sense. But you have to find someone. You have to find someone to make a claim. And then if you have to hire a lawyer, you might make a claim against the owner and make a claim against the condo association. You don't know where that water originated. Did it originate with the owner?
We do know. It comes from right above my bathroom.
Okay. But Rhoda, you told me two things here. You told me it's coming from the owner, then you told me it's coming originally from the common area, which would mean that the association
So the water passes through the common area into their bathroom. It didn't originate. It had to come.
Okay.
The supply of the water is coming through the common area.
So then what you have to do is you have to write a letter, or you're going to have someone write a letter or get a lawyer to write a letter and say that you are holding him responsible for that. Now, your first thing is to get the insurance company to cover it because they have the first right, probably. Their obligation is to pay for your damage and then go after the wrongdoer. So you don't have to go after the wrongdoer. You should just call your insurance company, get an insurance claim, find someone to go on the computer and make the claim, and hopefully that'll take care of it. Then let them go after the wrongdoer.
All right. Well, Rhoda, we have to get to the news. Good luck. I hope it works out for you. It's water damage is the worst. And
yeah.
If you've got people who aren't cooperating with you, not good. Karen Conti's here, 312-981-7200. Let's do this. Then it'll be news time, WGN. Brian Noonan and Karen Conti, 720 WGN. Karen comes in on Sunday night. She helps you out by answering your legal questions. 312-981-7200. That's how you get a hold of us. Don't wait till it's too late and then cry, oh, I ran out of time. We don't want to hear it. We give you plenty of warning. Interesting case from just the other side of the Indiana line. A woman the other day was in a Family Dollar store. Maybe it was a week or so ago. And she was wearing a traditional hijab. The full Muslim,
right.
Where only your eyes, I mean, this woman was covered up, only her eyes were shown. And the employee at the Family Dollar store basically threw her out, told her she wasn't welcome there, she had to take that off or she had to leave. We know from conversations that you and I have had with listeners for the past number of years, you can't discriminate on someone based on their religion. What about what they're wearing? You know, is it all right for someone who claims, because the owner of the store said, listen, this is a high crime area. We've got, you know, we want to see people's faces when they come in the store. We don't know, you know, what's going on. The woman said she's been in that store a lot, though.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I think, you know, from a strict legal standpoint, yes, you're right. You cannot discriminate against someone based upon religion. And the case that was interesting was the Abercrombie and Finch case, where the girl was trying to get a job there, and she was wearing her head scarf, and they didn't hire her for that reason. For some reason, they knew that was the reason, because she didn't comport with the idea of the all-American girl if she was wearing a headscarf. And the court said, can't do that. Can't discriminate, even if you've got a legitimate business reason for having somebody not look that way. This is an interesting case because it would really depend on my view here is how do they treat nuns? How do they treat males in hoodies? How do they treat someone with a Lone Ranger mask? How would they treat someone, you know,
somebody coming in my place with a Lone Ranger mask, I'm calling the cops right away.
Right.
Nun in a hoodie, I can see their whole face. Pretty much.
Because my bank, which is in my building, has a note on the door that says, we have the right to refuse service to people with sunglasses and people with hoodies. Because, obviously, they don't want people to go in and rob a bank and not be able to. And anyone wearing that might be of some suspicion to them. So I think it's legitimate to say, I don't want you in my store if you're covered. But you're going to have to treat everybody else who's covered the exact same way. And my guess is that this owner didn't. It presents a real dividing line because, yes, you can't discriminate, but if there's legitimate reasons to treat people differently for safety reasons or what have you, then the courts may say, yes, you can make that rule.
Well, and how hard is it to define that line? If I'm the owner of a business and I say, listen, I don't care what religion somebody is, I can't see that person's face, we've been robbed X amount of times, can someone bring a suit and say, well, it has nothing to do with safety. You just don't like that I'm wearing this religious garment.
It's hard to prove that one way or the other. There is no defining line, but it's also a matter of, you know, I'm sure the owner's going to say, I have a lot of Muslim women who come in.
Right.
It's not that. It's the fact that I just can't see her face. You know, there's all kinds of interesting cases. I remember in law school, we had a case that we examined where it was a Chinese restaurant and they only hired Chinese servers because they wanted to maintain the ambiance of having an ethnic restaurant.
Sure.
And that case came down to say, yes, you can discriminate based upon race in that case because you had a legitimate business reason. The cases where you have women and not men or men and not women,
right,
that becomes a little iffy because what's your legitimate business reason for hiring men, not women?
Well, if you've built well, let's say women, not men. So let's say Hooters. Or one of these,
yep,
Twin Peaks or one of the,
yep,
the new restaurants that come. Their business model is based on these attractive female servers. Okay, well, wouldn't that hold up as a business reason?
These cases go both ways. I think if you have a legitimate business model that requires a certain type of person, I think that these things have been upheld, or a real legitimate safety reason.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't know how this one's going to come out because I think it's real factual based here. How many people have you thrown out who just have the headscarf? How many nuns have you thrown out of the Family Dollar, you know?
Somebody very upset, caller, don't compare the hijab to a habit. We're comparing it to outfits that where someone's
why
face might be
covered.
Why
do people get so mad about this? What I'm saying is...
No, I understand you're saying.
Yeah, the head covering is the part that,
right,
that the guy said the fact that your head is covered, your face is covered, is a problem for the store.
Right. And I don't know the difference between the headscarves where the whole head is wrapped, but the whole face is out, and you can see everybody's face, which would be comparable to a nun's habit.
Right.
To the hijab this woman was wearing, which has the additional piece of fabric covering the nose and mouth, so only the eyes are visible.
So maybe that's not a good analogy, but maybe a ski mask. What if it's 10
right.
below zero?
Exactly.
And someone comes in a ski mask and a scarf over his face and a hat that and a hoodie that covers
right.
most
and
of
it
his
makes
face.
Sense that
and sunglasses. Okay, that is that the analogy? If that's the analogy, does he get thrown out of the restaurant,
yeah,
the place?
Anything
of
that where your whole
yeah.
face is covered.
Exactly.
You know, because listen, I don't as I said, I don't know the difference between the headscarves and things like that. But I do know if I'm a businessman in a neighborhood that may be a little iffy and I have safety concerns, I'm going to wonder when someone comes in. Now, I know enough to say, all right, this woman is wearing a religious garment. But does that necessarily mean that the woman under that garment is a religious woman, or is someone just using this as a way to cover up their identity so they can then do something else? As a business owner, I can't know that.
There's a perfect dovetail story on this, and I don't know all the facts of it, but the Chicago police tackled a woman with a traditional Muslim garb,
mm-hmm,
and they thought she was a suicide bomber. I don't know exactly, was it CTA housing? I don't know where it was, but she sued, and you know the idea was they thought she was somebody
right.
based upon the way she was dressed.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you are a person who's looking to stop terrorism and terrorist attacks, and they had some information apparently that led them to believe that something was going to happen, and they had a person who fit the bill, who looked like a person who could do this. You know, cops have a hard job on that. So again, you know, she brought the lawsuit saying she was discriminated against.
Right.
But again, when you're profiling people, sometimes profiling makes sense if you're looking for a certain type of person.
Well, and that's the tricky part with quote unquote profiling. If I have a description of someone, if I get a call on the, if I'm a police officer, I get a call, I say, we're looking for a person who looks like this, is wearing this, in this area, and all of a sudden you walk by, and you're pretty darn close. Boy, is that a black hoodie or is it a navy blue hoodie? This says black, that looks close.
Mistakes will be made. And, you know, even a bigger picture, Brian, is, you know, you're walking down the street and you see someone, you know, looking, you know, I don't care if it's a white guy with, like, a white power tattooed on his forehead
yeah.
and 16, you know, nose rings, you know, I'm going to move across the street. I don't like that profile, personally.
Right.
You know, maybe the guy's the nicest guy in the world, but I'm not taking my chances. So I think that, you know, some of this is common sense and some of this, you know, some of this is just basic, you know, looking to see who the bad guys are.
Right.
But you never know. The bottom line is you never know.
And as a business owner, you also don't know if you're, you know, maybe your employee who was working the register by the door that day is, in fact, you know, bigoted against someone because of their religion or their race. And suddenly your policy, your store policy doesn't do that, but now this person does. And then they're saying, well, it was safety, which makes sense, but is that their real motivator? Who knows?
And again, getting to motive is probably the hardest thing in the law. And we see all the discrimination cases and the harassment cases and the, you know, and how do you prove that somebody mm-hmm. didn't like you because you were African American versus I didn't like you because you were just a jerk.
Right.
You know? Or, you know, I didn't like you because you're over 40.
Yeah.
You know, well, no, you weren't doing your job. So, you know, it's always hard to prove.
Speaking of that, the not liking somebody, I talked to somebody who was listening to us last week when we got the call from someone or a text about asking if they could just be fired because they didn't think, and you're, at one point you went, hey, if your boss doesn't like you, he doesn't like you. You could get fired for any reason.
Absolutely.
So that just that term, they didn't like me, kind of triggered that in my mind. I know you didn't follow Making a Murderer that much. It was a widely
yep.
successful series, docudrama on Netflix. Just came down the other day that Brendan Dassey, the nephew of Stephen Avery, mm-hmm. both men convicted for the rape and murder of Teresa Halbach in Wisconsin. The confession was deemed by the federal judge to be coerced, and so his conviction has been overturned. The Stephen Avery's convictions have been upheld. He's appealed a number of times. Supposedly, he's got attorneys now who claim to have new evidence. But with Dassey's conviction being overturned, and a big part of Stephen Avery's conviction was based
yes.
on that confession, How tricky does that become? And if you're a defense attorney for Stephen Avery, is this news that's got you chomping at the bit?
Yes, it would be. You know, I saw a very quick 1 hour version of the story, and I don't recall right now where the appeal process is for Avery. And there's a point in time, Brian, where the courts, you go up and down on appeal, and you don't have any appeals left unless you can convince the court to reopen it based upon new evidence. This, I don't know if he's done with his appeals or not, but this would be something that I would think that the courts would allow him to reopen it, because you're right. His confession, as I recall, Brendan's confession, and he had a very low IQ, if mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken. That was part of the reason that his confession was thrown out and his conviction was overturned. Because there was not a whole lot of solid evidence against Avery, that this was a big piece of it, that if this falls and this caves, that Avery's conviction has to be impacted greatly. So certainly his lawyers are drafting motions as we speak and hoping that Brendan's conviction, and they're probably certainly going to retry him, I would imagine.
Well, they have 90 days. To decide if they're going to retry him, right? And that, well, this is what the federal judge said. Federal Judge William Duffin was the judge who made the decision, said that he overturned the convictions based on the way the confession was attained. He called it, quote, so clearly involuntary in a constitutional sense that the Court of Appeals' decision to the contrary was an unreasonable application of clearly established federal law. Can you translate that for those of us who are not?
The judge just found it was outrageous. The judge looked at the facts and probably saw the videotapes and all of that and looked at probably the doctor's records to see where his IQ fell.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he was just outraged. Now, bigger picture on this, I'm really, I guess as from a criminal defense standpoint, I don't really do that work anymore, but I used to do it. I see how some criminal defendants are treated horribly and they get there in jail forever for crimes they didn't commit. Not all of them, but
right.
some of them. And when I see that the spotlight being shined on a criminal defendant like this, and it took off. I mean, people
sure.
are obsessed with this case. There were so many people looking at it that I think that could not have this wouldn't have happened but for that.
Yeah.
So I think that all of the journalists who put these things together have done such a great job, and the public outcry really makes people, not that the judges are bad, but it makes the judges really stand up and look at things in a way that maybe they wouldn't and maybe would be a little passive about.
Now, the argument, and granted, it's a documentary filmmaking, is that, listen, this was slanted. All the information was not used. But the judges, this federal judge was not watching the TV series to make his decision. This federal judge was looking at evidence. And that's not to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, the judge overturned his conviction based on the confession and stuff. That doesn't mean the judge is saying he's innocent.
No. Nope.
Right? The judge is just saying the way you got this kid to confess was wrong. And so the conviction based on this doesn't hold water.
Right. So the conviction is, the confession is not going to be able to be used, is my understanding. So now they better have other evidence because they are not going to be able to show a jury his confession. He's not going to testify on the stand, I'm quite certain, because he's not really capable of being probably as coherent as he should. But what other evidence do they have against him? As I recall, it wasn't a whole lot.
Not too much. All right, I'll ask you this real quick then, and we'll take a break. We've got a couple text questions. 312-981-7200, you have a few more minutes to get your question in for Karen. If you take off a defense attorney hat and put on a prosecutor hat, you're looking at this now. You've had a federal judge say, listen, you guys botched this. You went about it the wrong way. The confession isn't going to hold. He's been in jail for, I think, 13 years or 10 years. Do you, as a prosecutor, try this again, or do you lick your wounds, go, all right, well, we put him away for this amount of time, we'll just, you know?
I would say the prosecutors are going to try him again, and here's why. First of all, you know, prosecutors, like all attorneys, are very competitive, mm-hmm. This is a huge blow to this whole case that has been subject of public, outrage, really. And so the prosecutors have been taking these hits, you know, they think this guy's, both of them are completely guilty. I mean, don't get me wrong, the prosecutors don't try normally to put innocent people in jail.
Right.
They think these guys are guilty, and they think beyond any reasonable doubt. So, yeah, they're going to try him again, and I think also because the conviction of Avery stands in the balance here, because what happens if they don't try him? Now he's walking out of there. Now there's a great argument that without a conviction against Dassey, then there's not going to be, there's a good argument that it should be undone. So I think they're absolutely going to retry him.
All right. Karen Conti is here for a few more minutes. How do people get a hold of you during the week, though?
Call me at 312-332-7800. And on email, it's kconti@kcontilaw.com.
More of your questions for Karen on the other side. It's WGN. What is that? Crazy kind of. It's the Beastie Boys, of course it is. Because nothing says legal advice like the Beastie Boys. Karen Conti is here. She's answering your legal questions. 312-981-7200. A few more minutes. So let's get those questions in. At what age can a minor child in Cook County decide which divorced parent they want to live with?
Good question. And there's no hard answer to that. The answer is, if the child is mature enough to make a rational decision or a rational suggestion for the judge will perhaps listen to the child. You know, you look at maybe girls mature a little quicker in the eyes of the law. So maybe when a girl's 12 or 13, you're going to start looking at what she has to say. And when a boy is maybe 13 or 14, you're going to look at that. And here's the thing. I mean, some children will say, I want to live with dad. And why do they want to live with dad? I'm making up dad versus mom. It could go completely either way.
Right.
Dad's more permissive. Dad lets me stay up and play video games. Mm-hmm. Dad lets me eat, pixie sticks for dinner. My mom makes me eat spinach, So that judge is going to go, okay, thank you for your suggestion, and is going to completely ignore, right? And sometimes kids think the grass is greener on the other side. I don't like my life. My mom makes me do this, so I'm going to go live with dad, or vice versa. So the judges don't listen if the rationale is not there.
Okay, so they do ask, because I was saying, we all know kids can be, one day they hate you, the next day they love you,
right.
And there's always some sort of
And I'm going to add to this that children don't usually get to weigh in. Judges try very hard to keep them out of this process. And usually, it's never in the courtroom. It'll be in camera, meaning in chambers with the judge. Okay. And the judge will ask the child questions, like in trying to do it in a way that...
Why would they do that?
You don't want the kid to think that. What
circumstances would it be where the judge went, okay, now I got to talk to the kid?
Well, I think sometimes when the child is older and, let's say, for instance, the child's living with the mother and there's a boy, and the boy says, according to the guardian and to different people in the case, the boy wants to go live with the man because, he needs a role model. And so the judge might want to hear, I want to hear from this kid. Is this the case, or is it for some other reason that's a bad reason?
Ah.
And the judges actually go to judge school and they get they learn how to ask questions of kids without making the kid feel like he's responsible for the change. Because can you imagine feeling responsible for being taken out of your father's home and given to your mother?
No.
You don't want to give that kind of responsibility, number one, because kids should be kids. But maybe a judge really feels like perhaps there might be corporal punishment, or there might be abuse of some type, or verbal abuse, or maybe they think maybe the parent has some issues, and the judge might want to hear from the kid.
Okay. Well, there you go. Pam's been hanging on. Pamela is in Addison. Hi, Pamela. You're on WGN.
Hi there. How are you?
We're well, thanks.
Hi.
I have a question I've been dying to ask an attorney, and I own a ladies' business. I design costuming, and I sell it to entertainers, and it's like mostly a ladies' business. And I have built up accounts at the nightclubs, and I sell exotic dancewear. And I've built up accounts where I have for 16, 17, 18 years. And I have manufacturers. I design clothes. I mean, they design clothes. So I've worked with the manufacturers for 20 years, and I've worked with them directly. But they always have a sales rep. And the sales rep, I knew him and about 17 years. But I never really worked. I mean, I knew him. We talked. But since he was never around at first, I always dealt with the owners. But I knew him very well. And all of a sudden, I started seeing a few of my items at certain places that he knew I had accounts. And I said, you need to come, and I don't want to mention his name, to my store, and let's have a meeting. So I laid out, okay, here's my accounts. You're my manufacturer. You sell to me. I sell to my accounts. You don't go to my accounts, okay? You're the manufacturer. You come, you sell to me directly. You make a lot of money off me commission-wise, so you don't get to go around me and, hurt me.
So Pamela, basically they're trying to eliminate the middle person.
Well, it's not that they're trying to, because they don't want to do that, because without me, there's no account really. And that's, the bottom line is he did go around me and he went to my account, and it doesn't say much for my account either, because that's a betrayal as well, because, it's just the way it is. But he went around me and then he denied it. And he denied it. And then finally I showed him the envelope that he sent my books, to my account. And then he said, well, we could just share the commission. And I said, listen, we don't work together. You are my sales rep. You don't get to do this. So my question is, it got really ugly, and I wound up filing bankruptcy because of what he did. I mean, I almost wound up losing my entire business over this. I lost three of my biggest accounts because of him. And his son, who's an attorney, sent me a letter and said, do not contact my father again, or, I'm going to have you arrested, cease and desist letter. It's like, oh, my God.
Okay.
So he didn't want to take responsibility for that. I'll just tell you one more thing, and then I have my question. So I called my manufacturer, and he said, well, he said he won't do this again. I said, it's done. There's nothing more to do. It's destroyed. So my question is, can I sue him, or is it just unethical what he did?
You really can't sue him unless you have a contract with the manufacturer saying that they will provide, that they're going to, you're going to be the one who sells. It's very common to have sales reps who go out in different territories and sell things for, and there's usually a contract with that, like an exclusive contract. But if you didn't have anything in writing, which I didn't hear you say you did, right?
No, I don't. Yeah. It's just common sense. I mean, you sell to me, I sell to them. You know my accounts. Why would you do that?
Right.
Because now you've lost everything. Yeah.
You really don't have a right to sue. I mean, you could probably conjure something up, some kind of fraud or misrepresentation. But really, to go after them when you don't have a great legal ground is going to be too expensive, and you should just move on and maybe even, find a new manufacturer if you can, because it doesn't sound like these people are very ethical.
Yeah, not at all. Well, good luck, Pamela.
Or smart.
Because
if you're selling stuff, they should keep, they should stick to what they're doing. Yeah, I mean, Pamela's the one who has the accounts and the relationships and
you're
the reputation and the face and all of that. Why would you have someone else come in and try to squeeze out a commission? That doesn't make any sense.
Oh, my goodness. Real quick, we got about 30 seconds. My daughter turns 18 in September, is a senior in high school, wants to move out. If she does, are we legally responsible to support her with money?
After she moves?
After she turns 18.
No. The only thing is, there is a possibility that maybe the other parent can ask for college money for her. She really has no right to ask for college money, but if the ex or the...
We don't know if they're divorced yet.
Yeah. If the parents are still intact, you're done with her at age 18. If there is a divorce situation, then one parent wants to help have you contribute to college, then that person can go to court and ask for it. But otherwise, no.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week.
All right.
All right. Karen Condry will be here next week. How do they get a hold of you during the week?
312-332-7800. Better yet, email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
And with Steve Cocker Wednesday morning at 6:40. Have a great week. We'll talk to you later.
Never miss a story with Chicago's very own news team.
I'm Steve Gordanich on Chicago's very own.
I'm Kevin Gordon on Chicago's very own.
Veronica Carter on Chicago's very own.
On 720.
WGN.
Thank you for listening and being part of the program. Don't forget, the first part of the web-exclusive podcast goes live on Facebook in just a couple minutes. So we hope you will join us there and then listen to the rest of the podcast at WGNradio.com. Have a wonderful night. Rick Kogan comes your way on the other side of the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. The news is sponsored by Natron's Healthy Trinity. 9 o'clock, Roger Batty.